Well, I will tell you, in these chapters, there's a lot going on. We have a real drama that plays out before us with Jacob and Laban and Esau. Can't forget about him. And then we have Rachel and Leah and Zilpah and Bilhah. There's just a lot going on in these chapters. A lot I'd like to cover. I'm sure I'll overlook something, so please forgive me for that. But hopefully this can spur us on to more study of these chapters. So last week we ended in chapter 27, right after Isaac gives the blessings to first Jacob and then Esau. And that's where I want to pick up. So go to verse 41 of chapter 27. And right after the blessings are given, in Esau's case, it's almost a curse, a cursing in many ways. The text says, "Now Esau hated Jacob." And this hatred is so strong that Esau is conspiring to kill Jacob. His belief is once the days of mourning have ceased for his father, verse 41, that he will do that. As far as I can remember, in the book of Genesis, we've not had a brother wanting to kill another one since Genesis 4. But here, the hatred is so strong that Esau is ready to kill Jacob, his twin brother. And so the fear is so strong in Rebekah that when she hears what's going to happen, she decides it's time for Jacob to leave. And so she's going to set in motion a trip for Jacob to go back to Haran. Now, if you'll remember, Haran is up to the north, up in this area. There's Haran there. There's Padan Aram there. That's where, of course, Laban lived. That's where, and of course, Laban is Rebekah's brother. And so she's sending him back up there, just like when Abraham wanted to find a wife for Isaac, he sent his servant back up there, found Rebekah. So now Rebekah is wanting to do the same thing, only this time Jacob himself will go. I'm sure we do. I don't have that in my notes. That's a great question. I know we've talked about it before. I believe it's like a 3 days journey. That's what sticks out in my head. But I don't know that's exactly the case. I know when we talked about the servant going up there, we did talk about how far it was. And you remember he wanted to leave real quickly to get back after finding Rebekah and getting the blessing for her to come. Does anybody remember? Am I close on that? Nobody knows. Well, at least you can't call me out here. You can talk about me at home. I honestly cannot remember off the top of my head, but it is a lengthy journey. We can say that. It is lengthy to get there. And so he's going to go there and find his distant family. And I want to notice something as she's talking to Jacob. I want to go down to verse 45. And as she's telling him to go, she says, "Until your brother's anger turns away from you, and he forgets what you have done to him, then I will send and bring you from there." Okay, so first, before I get into the last little question she asked, I believe she thinks this is going to be a short time. In reality, it's going to be 20 years before he comes home. 20 years. And so what she might have considered a short time definitely is not such. And then she concludes verse 45 by asking this question, why should I be bereft of you both in one day? Well, in some ways, she does lose Jacob. And if you remember back at the beginning of this whole situation, what did she say to Jacob when Jacob became concerned that he might end up getting cursed instead of blessed? She said, I'll take the curse on myself. And so in a way, she did endure a curse from all of these activities in that she lost her son for 20 years of his life. She does not get to see the birth of her grandchildren. And so because of her scheming and because of Jacob's scheming and deception, they do suffer from it. And then verse 46, she goes into Isaac to convince him to send Jacob, that she does not want to have another Hittite daughter-in-law, which, if you remember, how did those two daughter-in-laws that Esau had married, how did they act? They weren't good, were they? They caused Isaac and Rebekah a great deal of trouble. We're not told what. But they did bring chaos into the family. And so she says, I don't want that for Jacob. And so Isaac gives his blessing. And so Jacob leaves. Then we get into chapter 28. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on 28, but just to note, in the first five verses, we have Jacob being sent away and told to go again to the north, to appear to Haran to find Laban, and that's what he does. I'm going to kind of skip beyond that, if that's okay. I do want to note for just a minute verses 6 through 8, or 6 through 9. You have Esau, as always, kind of trailing after Jacob. Here, he sees that Isaac has sent Jacob away because he didn't want him to marry one of the Canaanite women. And so what does he decide to do? He says, I'm going to go find me a wife from somewhere else too. And so he goes to Ishmael's son, his firstborn son, and he provides him a wife. Mahalath, and so he ends up marrying the daughter. It's the daughter of Ishmael, the sister to Nebatheth. Not sure if I'm pronouncing it right, but it's close. He ends up marrying her. One of the things I just keeps coming back to me is Genesis chapter 1 and chapter 2. How here's another way that you see the people going away from God's plan. You remember in Matthew 19 when the Jewish leadership comes to Jesus and they bring up this debate around a certificate of divorce. And they're trying to get Jesus to make a statement about whether it's a good law or not. What was Jesus' response? Do you remember?
It was the heart made of your heart.
That he allowed you a certificate of divorce. But what? But that's not the way it was from the beginning. That was never God's intention. When you go back to Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, what was the intention? One man, one wife, one woman joined in marriage together. One of the issues when we get specifically into the life of Jacob is much of the problem for his self and his children is caused because they did not follow that prescription. Even the turmoil between Rachel and Leah and all the things that happened was because he got out of God's plan. And he ends up with two wives and two concubines, and it causes him a great deal of trouble. And this is going to be something that continues forward to cause issues with the people, with even the people of God. All right, going back to Genesis 28, we have here the end of 28. Jacob has a dream, a vision from God. What's the vision? What's taking place here? Well, he sees in his dream what translations have, most commonly, is a ladder. Now, from my understanding of the Hebrew, there's a little bit of ambiguity here. This may mean more like a stairway. And, you know, you have one image of a ladder in your mind, and it's different, isn't it, from a stairway. Whichever way, it doesn't really matter. What's the emphasis of this dream, do you think? What is God trying to explain? It seems kind of, there's almost a little bit of obscurity to it about why does God reveal this to Jacob? What do you think? I'm with you. Other ideas? So on the ladder, as we look at it, what do we see? All right, so verse 12 says, he dreamed, and behold, there was a ladder set up where? On earth, and the top of it reached into heaven. So what's he trying to symbolize? Communication, right? There's a line of communication between earth and God. You may know this already, but as he looks at it, he sees what? Angels ascending, descending. Now, angel, that term, means what? It means a messenger, right? A messenger from God. Now, we most often think about this as some spirit being, right? Angels from heaven. But that term doesn't always refer to those mystical beings. It can just simply infer the idea of someone sent by God. So we're looking at this. I don't think the emphasis is on some mystical being, but it is on what? God's communication with man. That God is going to have an open communication with man. Now, why show this to Jacob, do you think? So I'll give you my thought is, what is Jacob but the father to whom? The nation of Israel. What does Israel represent in the history of man? The nation of Israel. What do they represent? God's what? God's chosen people. What else? Any other ideas that come to your mind? What about the law of Moses? What is the law of Moses but God's communication to mankind of what he wants, right? And so God did have communication with other nations at times, but the nation of Israel had a direct line to God. That's seen both in the law and in the tabernacle. What did the tabernacle represent but the presence of God? And so in within the nation of Israel, you did have this gateway of messages from God to man and man to God. And so you see somewhat that in the nation of Israel. But this even plays out in a much larger scale when it comes to the church. The church has what? The ability to approach God. Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 16. What does the Hebrews writer say? Verse 15 tells us we have a high priest, right? Jesus. And then verse 16 says, because of that, therefore, what should we do? Confidently. To ask for help in the time of need. All right? And so Jesus provides us a ladder, if you will, to God, to the throne room of God. And so I like looking at Matthew 16. You remember Matthew 16? You have Peter, and Peter makes the great confession of faith, and Jesus tells him in verse 18, Yeah, I believe. It's 13 is where they begin this conversation in Caesarea Philippi. And Jesus says, "Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood what? Has not revealed this to you, but who? But the Father has," right? And then after that, he says, after telling them that he's going to build his kingdom, he says that, "And I will give you what? The keys to the kingdom of God. And whatever you bind on earth will have been bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will have been loosed in heaven." Again, that idea of God communicating his message to us. And so you see this ladder or stairway, if you will, this gateway to heaven clearly played out through the children of Jacob. And so after he receives this vision, and I'm sure Jacob he probably never really understood what God was trying to communicate here, but God left this for the generations later who could look back and see what God was trying to communicate. It's after this that he takes that headrest, that stone he laid his head on, and he sets up a memorial stone here in this place. Where is he, by the way? Where is he? Anybody know? Bethel. Why is that an important place? When we look at, it's here, just below Shechem. Bethel sits where today? Near the place of Jerusalem, right? Near the place of where God would eventually set up his temple, right? And then later would be the place of Christ's crucifixion. What else have we already seen in this place, Bethel, right near this area? I don't know the exact locations of all these. What's that? Moriah, but it's close, right? Again, it's kind of centered up there. Let me say this. We don't know exactly where that was. We know approximately. But again, we're right in this central location. All these major events occur. Remember earlier the trees of Mamre where Abraham spent so much time? What was he doing at the trees of Mamre? That's where he was worshiping God at. Well, again, this place gets huge emphasis again in Scripture there with Bethel. The term Bethel, you may know what it literally means. House of God. House of God. I find that very fascinating. House of God. So that's chapter 28. Any questions up to that point?
What about a bread? I remember something about a bread. House of bread.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because me and Turner were talking about that just before we started. But if you look here at the text, you have Jacob. I'm glad you brought that up because I meant to mention this. He makes a vow. Verse 20. He says, "If God will be with me and keep me in this way." Now, when you read that, that almost sounds kind of like he's making a bargain with God. That's not what the original Hebrew is emphasizing or really trying to say. He's saying, since God, probably a better idea here, is since God will be with me. He's not trying to make a cheap bargain with God. He's not trying to bargain with God, essentially. But what he is saying, you're my God. Or since you bless me and you've been with me, he says, will keep me in this way that I go and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear. What are those representative of? Our basic needs, right? Providing for our basic needs. so that I come again to my father's house in peace. Then the Lord shall be my God, and this stone which I have set up for a pillar shall what? Shall be God's house. So, just interesting, again, the promise of God to meet his daily needs. Now, there's deeper implications about what, as you mentioned, the bread comes to represent. When you look at the manna and other things, and then when you get to the New Testament with Jesus, of course, there's a deep spiritual meaning to bread later. But here, he's inferring the idea of his basic physical needs. Vance, do you have a question? Okay. What particular phrase is that? Where is that at? I'm saying where at in this section is that word? But
that's what
Oh, you mean later? Okay, it's not here in this text. I got you. Bethlehem. Okay, I got you. I thought I missed something. I got you. I understand now. Catch up in my brain there. But that's not Bethlehem, right?
No, I know.
House of God. That's the literal translation of that word. Good questions, good comments. This is a section we could quickly overlook, but there's so much here that maybe if we don't take time, we can miss it, but there is much to learn. Any other questions about this chapter? All right, well, I'm going to transition to 29. I'm not going to get to this, I don't think, today. I was very optimistic, but I'll have it up there for next week, or the week after, I guess, because next week we'll be meeting. You're talking about in the vision. He says, verse 12, that the top of it reached up to heaven, and behold, the angel of God were ascending and descending. Is that what you're talking about? And then verse 13, the Lord stood above it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. And again, you'll note that the Lord is the name of God. That's Yahweh in the original text. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, I hope that works. But you don't hear a lot of teaching when you teach on this passage of Scripture. They don't mention that point. That's caught my attention when I'm reading it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the emphasis, right, that all these are coming from God. God is sending the angels or the messengers from his side. Mm-hmm. Any others? All right, let's go to 29. We get into the drama of the events here with Jacob and Leah and Rachel. There's so much to cover. I know I won't get super far into this, but let's go ahead and look at it. So verse 1 tells us he travels to the land of the people of the east. The ideal there being he's traveling back to Haran. That name is just, Mesopotamia. Whew. So the idea there is the Mesopotamian land. He's traveling back there, or he's traveling to there for the first time. Verse 2 says, he looked, he saw a field, and behold, three flocks of sheep lying beside it. For out of that well, flocks were watered. Now, we've already seen that wells are super important to those people. Because of the dryness of the land, you know, water was something that was important. If you remember when Isaac was traveling through the land, what were the people trying to do to him? He'd dig a well, they'd come and claim it. And then sometimes they would come and just bury the well so he couldn't use it. And that happened to him several times as he traveled through that land. Wells were very significant. And at this well, there's something kind of unique. What were they doing? They were taking a large stone and were placing over the top of the well. Now, why would you do that? Two really important reasons. Is number one, it would limit evaporation so that the sun would not cause it to evaporate away, and so you could keep that water. And then number two, it also limited what? Access. So that not just anybody could come and take from the well. You have, as the text tells us, that there's flocks gathering there. The shepherds have come, but nobody has taken the stones away. Let's go to verse 4. So Jacob said to those shepherds, my brothers, where do you come from? They said, we are from Haran. That's where he's trying to get to, right? He said to them, do you know Laban, the son of Nahor? They said, we know him. He said to them, is it well with him? They said, it is well. And see, Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep. He said, behold, it is still high day. It is not time for the livestock to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go pasture them. What's he trying to point out here? Why would you come at the high point of the day when it's this most hot? Right, why wouldn't you do this at other times, maybe earlier on in the day so it's not so hot? I can't help but think about John 4, right, with the woman at Jacob's well. And here they are. They're gathered there. They're not removing the stone. And so he's wondering why. But verse 8 says, they said, we cannot until all the flocks are gathered together and the stone is rolled from the mouth of the well. Then we water the sheep. While he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. As soon as Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, Jacob came near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and wept aloud. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's kinsman, and that that he was Rebekah's son. And she ran and told her father. Kind of interesting thing. Now the phrase there, he kissed her, is not, he didn't grab her and kiss her on the lips, right? This was a greeting, but it's kind of, he's being a little bit impulsive here, you might say. She at the time does not know who he is, does not know him from Adam. But of course, he is really excited. His journey's come to an end. He's found the people he came looking for, and he's excited. And of course, she runs and tells Laban what has happened. Trying to see if there was something else there. As you continue reading, you have verse 13. As soon as Laban heard the news about Jacob, his sister's son, he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. Jacob told Laban all these things, and Laban said, surely you are bone of my bone. that's not right. Surely you are my bone and my flesh. That does recall kind of what we see in Genesis chapter 2. not quite the same. And he stayed with him a month. And so he comes there. Initially, he's going to stay a month. And then we'll stop here, but we'll get into this next week. We'll get into the deception of Laban and how he deceives Jacob into marrying Leah. And ends up working for him for a great while. 20 years, he'll eventually work for him. And so it brings a lot of drama into his life. And he, 20 total, so he works for Leah for 7, and then Rachel for 7, but then he stays beyond that. He continues to work. You may remember, after he marries them and they bear children for him, God then blesses him to gain wealth. Well, how does he gain wealth? It's through a deal he makes with Laban, where God blesses Jacob and not Laban. But we'll get into the whole sheep, which ones are striped and spotted and all the other different arrangements of coloration. Any other questions? Good ones. All right. We'll look at that next week, and y'all go ahead. Please read ahead, and we'll be ready to discuss that and get into that drama.